Hey, welcome to another edition of the Amber May Show. I'm so glad to be back with you. I took a spring break and now I am back in the studio, so I am so excited to be here. I have some few headlines I want to go over with you today. So I wanted to check out a couple of episodes with Tucker Carlson because he had some really great points that I wanted to cover and I loved how he said it. But first, I want to show you this video clip of this lady collapsing on air.
Welcome to Take On News 7 on CBS, streaming on CBS News Los Angeles. I'm Rachel Camp.
And I'm Michelle Medina, in for Sheba, who is ready for some sunshine. I know I am. Let's start off with a check of your next weather with meteorologist Alyssa Carlson. She joins us live in the studio. Alyssa, this really is the calm before the storm.
Not again. No. Oh.
You know, we're going to go ahead and go to break right now.
Yeah. We'll be right. Jamie
Ukis. That is insane, right? That was live on air. And let's see. She just collapsed. She was ready for sunshine. And then she just collapsed while she was on air. She appears faint and her eyes appear crossed. She then slumps forward onto her desk, collapses, and she disappears from view. Two anchors appear to have delayed reaction, but immediately cut to commercial when they realize what happened. How officials informed TMZ that emergency responders are immediately called and Carlson was taken to the hospital. So there's other video that I wanted to talk about. I wanted to share with you, and this had to do with Tucker Carlson. And I loved what he had to say about climate change. So check it out.
Go to Tucker Carlson tonight. It's been a tough couple of years for the experts. When it comes to big public policy questions, complicated adult stuff like war and disease and the economy, really the only things that matter, the assumption in Washington has for many years been that you should not worry about it. Don't sweat the details. That's not your role as a citizen and as a voter. We don't have that kind of democracy, the kind where you might actually participate. No, your job is to trust the experts and their conclusions and then obey them. But COVID kind of blew that up. If there's one thing we learned from that disaster, it's that public policy experts very often had no clue what they were talking about. Your hippie aunt in Mendocino County knew a lot more about how to beat a flu virus than your average virologist on CNN. Your aunt would tell you to go outside, get some exercise, some sunlight, some fresh air, stop eating junk food, turn off your computer once in a while, spend time with other people. Be healthy. That advice worked. The experts, by contrast, made you get the vaccine, and that did not work. So by March of 2021, people are starting to figure this out. Anyone who was paying attention in America understood that the experts, many of them, were full of it. And it was exactly at that moment that the Atlantic magazine in Washington published a piece pushing back against the growing consensus. That story was entitled, "Following Your Gut Isn't the Right Way to Go." It's hard to think of a funnier headline, really, mostly because it's so spectacularly absurd. You should always trust your gut. Obviously, it is the one thing that will never betray you. But the Atlantic magazine wanted you to know that your natural instincts are, in fact, worthless. The experts had a rough year, the magazine conceded, but we still have to trust them. Right. Actually, we don't have to trust them. And on big questions of public policy, we absolutely should not trust them. It's a democracy. But Washington is continuing to demand that we do trust them. Why? There may be a reason. Maybe COVID isn't the only big project they have in mind for us, a project the experts will justify on MSNBC. And indeed, it's not. There is the climate change agenda. And the climate change agenda is the single most ambitious effort to remake human civilization in all recorded history. And it's coming. In fact, it's already in progress. The only reason that millions and millions of Americans aren't protesting in the streets tonight over this effort to completely overturn their lives is that on some level, many people still do trust the experts, at least on climate change. But should they? We were pondering that this morning when we saw that the world's most famous climate change expert, Greta Thunberg of Sweden, just deleted a tweet she wrote in June of 2018. Here it is, quote, "A top climate scientist is warning that climate change will wipe out all of humanity unless we stop using fossil fuels over the next 5 years." Scientist, of course, was a Harvard professor, so obviously that prediction was going to be correct. But here we are still driving our Silverados and still alive, and some of us are still happy. So it does make you wonder if Greta Thunberg, the greatly revered Greta Thunberg, a perennial finalist for the Nobel Peace Prize, could have gotten that so wrong. What else have the climate experts gotten wrong? And how long have they been getting it wrong? Well, fortunately, the Competitive Enterprise Institute has done the research on this, and it turns out these people have been very wrong for a very long time. 1969, the New York Times was printing climate hysteria from an expert called Paul Ehrlich, quote, "We must realize that unless we're extremely lucky, everybody will disappear in a cloud of blue steam in 20 years. That was Paul Ehrlich in 1969. Well, here it is, 2023. And that same Paul Ehrlich, who's now 90 and still publishing books and still being cited on 60 Minutes, is still telling us that we're all going to die. Now, clearly, Paul Ehrlich had some sort of traumatic childhood he's been inflicting on the rest of us for over 50 years. And for 50 years, his fellow experts have taken him seriously. Now, back then, of course, climate change didn't mean global warming. It meant a new ice age. In 1970, the Boston Globe reported, "Scientists predict a new ice age by 21st century. According to the Globe, air pollution may obliterate the sun and cause a new ice age in the first third of the next century." An ice age. In 1972, Brown University's science department sent letters to the White House explaining that they had deep concern with the future of the world, because this ice age falls within the rank of processes which produced the last ice age. 2 years later, 1974, The Guardian reported that, quote, "spy satellites show new ice age is coming fast." And the report cited, just for moral weight, analysis carried out at Columbia University. Then, a few years later, 1977, the actor Leonard Nimoy was not a science expert technically, but played one at one point on television, shot this video.
"We are unprepared for the next advance. The result could be hunger and death on a scale unprecedented in all of history. What scientists are telling us now is that the threat of an ice age is not as remote as they once thought. During the lifetime of our grandchildren, Arctic cold and perpetual snow could turn most of the inhabitable portions of our planet into a polar desert."
Hunger and death on an unprecedented scale. Someone else with the tragic childhood he inflicted on the rest of us. But by the early 1980s, when the ice didn't arrive, well, the experts decided the problem wasn't too much cold, it was too much heat. It was global warming. In 1989, the Associated Press ran this story, quote, "A senior UN environmental official says entire nations could be wiped off the face of the earth by rising sea levels if global warming trend is not reversed by the year 2000. In other words, 23 years.
I remember that as a child, hearing that the sea levels were going to kill us because the snow caps were going to melt, rising, making the oceans rise, and therefore creating a Noah-like flood.
Years ago. That same year, 19...
Oops, sorry.
89, a climate expert called Jim Hansen met with a reporter from Ceylon. According to Ceylon, Hansen explained that within 20 or 30 years, quote, the West Side Highway, which runs along the Hudson River in Manhattan, will be underwater. Underwater. We checked tonight, and actually it's congested, but still a road. Then in March of 2000, the Independent newspaper ran a piece explaining that snowfalls are now just a thing of the past. And we're quoting, "Snow is starting to disappear from our lives." The piece quoted a climate expert claiming that, quote, "children just aren't going to know what snow is. No idea what snow is. It'll be a relic, not of the ice age, but of the great inferno of global warming." Then in 2004, amazingly, civilization still existed. The Guardian predicted that, quote, "major European cities will be sunk beneath rising seas as Britain is plunged into a Siberian climate by 2020, which is a little confusing because global warming doesn't typically produce a Siberian climate. And it was around this time that they decided, hey, we don't want to get pinned down on the details. Will it be too hot? Will it be too cold? We don't want to say. Something bad's going to happen, so we're going to call it climate change. And that paved the way for Al Gore, who in 2006 released his famous documentary, An Inconvenient Truth. And the beauty of an inconvenient truth is now that it's been, well, inconveniently more than 15 years since it came out, we can fact check its claims. Here's the trailer.
If you look at the 10 hottest years ever measured, they've all occurred in the last 14 years. And the hottest of all was 2005. This is Patagonia, 75 years ago, and the same glacier today. This is Mount Kilimanjaro, 30 years ago, and last year. Within the decade, there will be no more snows of Kilimanjaro.
Al Gore also said there would be no ice in the Arctic. He quoted researchers, climate researchers, experts, and he explained that, quote, the North Pole will be ice-free in the summer by 2013 because of man-made global warming. Now, it does take a certain level of chutzpah to make a prediction that precise, and Al Gore made many of them, and all of them turned out to be wrong. And for a normal person, that would be a cue, maybe it's time to retire.
So here the global change, climate change, with the methane that they're trying to push, almost killed all the cattle farmers in Holland. And so this is all a bunch of lies on fake science that isn't real. And they're trying to cut the food supply so that they can eat the beef, but we can't. So they want to make the food scarce for you and I. But while we're starving, they can go eat as much beef and as much stuff as they want while we eat bugs. So
I'm rich on Google stock. Maybe I could just stop talking because, of course, I've been disgraced by my own foolish predictions. But no, he kept going. And he was helped in that by the entire news media. It makes you wonder why. News organizations exist to bring you the news, to assess whether things are true or not. But if all of them collude to hide lying, you have to ask, is there something else going on here?
Mm-hmm.
We'll let you decide. We do know that by 2006, NBC News informed the world that, quote, a leading U.S. climate researcher says the world has a 10-year window till 2016, a window of opportunity to take decisive action on global warming and avert catastrophe. Well, of course, by their predicted date, Donald Trump became president, but that's not what they were predicting. In 2008, the Associated Press reported that according to a top NASA scientist, in 5 to 10 years, the Arctic will be free of sea ice in the summer. That didn't happen, but of course no one was ever held to account for bad predictions, so this kept going. John Kerry, now our climate czar, cited that very same science in 2009. Watch.
My name is Jim Rickards. I'm a former advisor to the CIA, Department of Defense, and the White House.
You have sea ice, which is melting at a rate that the Arctic Ocean now increasingly is exposed. In 5 years, scientists predict we will have the first ice-free Arctic summer.
What's hilarious is this is a guy who's never had a job. He's only been in politics. He's never done one useful thing. He's not a scientist. He's never done research. He's actually not an expert, but because he's way more aggressive than you are, and because he has access to the media, which amplify his claims, he poses as one.
Good point. And he also uses jets and cars and things that put out carbon emissions. Oh my God, carbon emissions. If they were so bad, none of those people would be using jets and cars and all those things. If the carbon emission was so bad and they really believed in it, they wouldn't be using it. Think about it. If you have something that you strongly believe to your core is bad, or you believe another way of living is better, you're going to live the better way. You're not going to do the things that you believe to your core is so bad. So if these people really believed in climate change and these carbon emissions, just like Ezra Levant showed at the World Economic Forum, that they took private jets and they landed several miles away from Davos, then they helicoptered their way to Davos. If they really believed this climate change was so bad, they wouldn't be doing it. They would have came any other way to Davos. They would have used sleighs with dogs, dog sleds. They would have done anything other than flying privately and then privately again. you know, horseback, donkeys, whatever they want to do. Like, they would have done other ways if they truly believe this to be true.
Now, what's strange about the prediction you just heard is that John Kerry's prediction contradicts Barack Obama's famous climate prediction from a year earlier. You probably remember this.
Because if we are willing to work for it and fight for it and believe in it, then I am absolutely certain that generations from now, we will be able to look back and tell our children that this was the moment when we began to provide care for the sick and good jobs to the jobless. This was the moment when the rise of the oceans began to slow and our planet began to heal.
Sad to watch that, all the cheering people, they seem so sincere. He's going to save the world. He can control the weather. He's Jesus. But in fact, the global healing Obama promised at the beginning of his first term never came, and neither did the global destruction. Here, by the way, is Neil deGrasse Tyson, another great predictor of things, saying that by 2014, the Statue of Liberty will soon be underwater.
You know what I tell people? This wakes them into here in the New York metropolitan area. I say, you know, if we lose the ice caps, you know how high the water will be? I say, oh, maybe a couple of feet. No, it would come up to the Statue of Liberty's elbow, the one that's holding the Declaration of Independence.
Why are they laughing at the Declaration of Independence?
That's where the water line will be.
That man's a scientist. And of course, climate does change. It has always changed. In fact, the landscape we live in now is formed by climate change. The glaciers are a product of climate change. The climate is changing now. It never stops changing. That is a process that we didn't cause and that we can't control to any great degree. We'll never be able to control. And there are upsides to it and downsides to it. By the way, if the Earth is indeed getting warmer, and it seems to be, well, then that will make more arable land in places like Canada and Northern Europe. So like everything in this life, in the temporal world, it's a mixed blessing. But you only hear the downsides, which tells you a lot. It tells you this is not science, it's manipulation.
Bingo. These
are reports.
It's not science, it's manipulation. He hit the nail on the head.
From the experts, these are threats. Here's Joe Biden.
That's what climate change is about. It is literally, not figuratively, a clear and present danger. The latest climate report, nothing less than, quote, code red for humanity. Let me say it again. Code red for humanity.
Code red for humanity. Of course, he never explains what that means. You're going to have to check your book of science to find out. Of course, in the details, they don't offer as many details now because they've all been wrong. But the extent they do, they are provably wrong over time. So the question is, why are we still being bullied by these people? It has nothing to do with saving the Earth. They hate the Earth. They hate nature. It's about controlling us. Maybe we should recognize that.
Bingo. It's about controlling us. That's all they care about. I'm going to get to that thought in just a second, but right now I'm going to take a quick break.
Looks like you've been sleeping well.
Megan, he's back. The MyPillow guy.
And you're looking good.
Still feeling good.
Well, just when you thought it couldn't get any better, we've got the best pillow ever, MyPillow 2.0. When I invented MyPillow, it had everything you'd ever want in a pillow. Well, now there's new technology that makes it even better. MyPillow 2.0 has my patented fill combined with a cooling fabric with temperature regulating thread. MyPillow 2.0 is truly the next generation of MyPillow.
The best sleep just got even better. Whether you have a MyPillow or not, you need to get the brand new MyPillow 2.0. Call or go to MyPillow.com now. Use your promo code, and for a limited time, when you buy one, you'll get a second one absolutely free.
You're sleeping even better.
And cooler, too.
And you're looking good.
Feeling good.
I knew you would.
Visit MyPillow.com.
These days, it's hard finding doctors you can trust. But look no further, because now you can go to Dr. Meehan at MeehanMD.com for all your future healthcare needs. And while you're there, you might want to check out his supplements. He has some amazing supplements. For instance, the Optimal Defense, that is perfect for the cold and flu time of year. That helps support your immune system. And if you have like reoccurring issues that come up with your health, that might be a great supplement for you to try. You may also want to check out Immune Plus. It has herbs like echinacea and elderberry. And Immune Plus also contains medicinal mushrooms to help support the body's natural defenses. So if you're looking for a doctor you can trust, set up a telemed appointment with Dr. Meehan at MeehanMD.com. Use promo code AMBER while you're there. Again, Meehan is spelled MeehanMD.com for all your telemed and supplemental needs. And remember, use promo code AMBER at checkout. You are listening to the Amber May Show, and now we return to the show already in progress. Well, welcome back to the show. I have something I also wanted to talk to you about. I wanted to talk to you about if you have like some really bad skin issues. I was just in the Midwest, and the wind is like crazy, right? Wind is so crazy, and it can chap your skin. My sister has this amazing salve. So if you go to savvybee.info, you can go get her salve, and it's amazing. It works so fast. For instance, like I have braces, and you probably don't know because I have Invisalign, and I didn't know that braces chap your skin. It makes my lips so chapped that it cuts, like I get cuts in my lips. And that Savvy Bee really helps. So you want to take a look at that. Make sure you go to savvybee.info. And check us out on the website at theambermayshow.com. And I always add more content to Telegram. So make sure you join us at theambermayshow.com. Now, so we're going to be talking about the banking coming up right now. And a couple things that I want to talk to you about is right now is a great time to get some gold and silver in your portfolio. Gold and silver has lasted throughout the beginning of time as a currency. It has intrinsic value. It helps protect against inflation. So, and for instance, like in the early 1900s, if you had a $20 bill, you can get an entire men's suit. Everything, the coat, the tie, the everything, right? Or you could also buy it with a piece of gold. Today, 20 bucks only gives you the tie. You can't get the jacket, the shirt, the pants, the sock. You can't get anything except maybe a tie. If you still had a piece of gold, you can buy the entire men's suit. So now's the time to be thinking about protecting your money. And one way you can do that is with gold and silver. The other way you can do that is with life insurance policies. And if you'd like to secure yourself with life insurance policies, now's a great time to do so. In the early 1930s, when there was late 1920s, early 30s, when they had the collapse of the stock market, people were losing their homes and everything like that. Insurance policies were saving farmers. They were able to pull cash out from their policy, buy seeds, protect their home using the money to pay for the seeds, the farming stuff that they needed, and also make their monthly payments for their home. So a life insurance policy is wonderful. So if you want to protect your money, you can take it out as a tax-free loan. And the loans work differently than a typical car loan or a house loan. It's different. So you can talk to a financial expert about that. And the people I trust is at EPS Wealth Management. You can go to iloveeps.com or epswealthmanagement.com. They can help you there. So I wanted to share some more info on banking collapse.
Better, a more precise sense of what it means when Joe Biden brags about the strongest and most equitable economic recovery in modern history. What it means is it could be time to buy gold and stockpile food. Oh, there's a deal on Russian steel case. I think I'll pick up a pallet. Just kidding, sort of. Yesterday, some of the biggest banks in this country, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, JP Morgan, Morgan Stanley, collectively lost more than $50 billion in market value in one day. That's quite a hit. On the other hand, those banks still exist, and you can't say that for Silicon Valley Bank. As of this morning, Silicon Valley Bank, or SVB, has gone under completely. That makes the second biggest bank failure in the history of this country. And it's significant. SVB financed nearly half of all venture-backed healthcare and technology companies in the United States. It also apparently held significant cash reserves for some of the biggest cryptocurrencies, and it's now gone. federal regulators have renamed it and taken it over. And that means an awful lot of people lost an awful lot of money. And no, most of that money was not insured, no matter what they tell you. The FDIC only guarantees bank deposits up to $250,000. And according to some reports, more than 90% of all deposits at SVB exceeded that. And it's unclear whether those people ever see their money again. In fact, when customers showed up at SVB's branch in Manhattan today to get their deposits back, managers called the police. So what we have here is a 1929-style bank run, and that's not a good sign for anyone. The question is whether the people who run SVB saw it coming. The CEO, a man called Greg Becker, apparently sold more than $2 million in bank stock over the last 2 weeks. According to the site Unusual Whale, several other high-level employees of SVB, including Chief Marketing Officer Michelle Draper, Chief Operations Officer Phil Cox, General Counsel Michael Zucker, all sold significant amounts of stock in SVB this year. Did those employees know their bank was in trouble? We don't know. And once again, where were the regulators who were supposed to prevent this? Once again, we don't know. And the business press supposed to be telling ordinary people what's happening with business? Apparently, nobody noticed anything. In fact, as with the FTX crypto scam, you may recall, self-described financial experts in the media were busy promoting Silicon Valley Bank as a great investment that would last forever. The formerly great but now quite embarrassing Forbes magazine, in fact, named SVB to its list of America's best banks, not once, but 5 years in a row. And of course, inevitably, you saw this coming. Here is professional BS artist slash dumb person Jim Cramer of CNBC telling his viewers to buy Silicon Valley Bank, even as it was in the process of going under. This is last month.
SVB Financial, don't you want? This company's a merchant bank with a deposit base that Wall Street had been mistakenly concerned about. SVB is the old Silicon Valley Bank. Recently bought one of our favorite research firms, Moffitt Nathanson, and it's become less dependent upon private equity and venture capitalist offerings. Wait a second. Those dried up last year, they could come back. Long-term private equity and venture capital, they're not going away. Being the banker to these immense pools of capital has always been a very good business. SVB's nearly 40% rally this year is barely a drop in the bucket.
SVB is great. If that guy ever endorses anything you're doing, move to the Canary Islands. Change your name because disaster's coming. But just like FTX, all the geniuses told you to buy SVB even when it was on the brink of total collapse. What explains that? Surely something does. We don't really know at this point. Hopefully we will someday. What we can say tonight is that SVB, like the scammers at FTX, had quite the public relations department. We're not some greedy finance outfit that exists solely to generate cash for overpaid sleazeballs who run it. No, that's not us. We may be a bank. We've got the soul of an NGO. We care. We're saving the world. And to prove it, there's a whole page on SVB's website about their plans to, quote, monitor and reduce our own carbon emissions. Yes, because you want a bank that cares about carbon emissions. And of course, there's endless posturing, because it's all free, about diversity, equity, and inclusion. Marissa Phan, the managing director at SVB, wrote this on LinkedIn just 3 weeks before the bank collapsed. Quote, feeling inspired and energized after hosting an extraordinary group of pioneering and dynamic women at Silicon Valley Bank's female founder and VC Tahoe ski retreat. Boy, adjectives are free. They use a bunch of them. And then she attached pictures of the ski trip, showing the group of these pioneering and dynamic female bankers having a great time. Because of course they're having a great time, because few things are more empowering to oppressed female bankers than skiing in Tahoe. And they kept this crap up to the very end. As their bank began to slip beneath the waves, SVB posted this on its social media feeds. Quote, as part of Women's History Month, we're celebrating founders of women-led companies like Sumo Wealth's Beatrice Acevedo, a company that SVB described lovingly as, quote, focused on closing the Latinx wealth gap. It's the problem with Latinx. There's a wealth gap. And there was a video, too. Of course there was. So now that SVB has blown up and lost billions of other people's money in the process, we thought we would show you the video because, oh, we can't resist. Enjoy.
My name is Beatriz Acevedo. I am the CEO and co-founder of Sumo Wealth. I was born in Tijuana, Mexico. I am a very proud border girl who had the privilege to grow up with the best of both worlds. I went to school in San Diego. I went to UCSD. I have a lot of scars from my days going across the border. I remember I got this memo and it just said that all my shows were canceled. And it was a time where women, never men, were put into something they called the refrigerator. If they felt like you had a lot of power, they would just put you there to cool you off for a while.
Unaddressed in the video is whether she's actually a capable banker. We hope so. We have no idea. We know the guys at SVB were not capable bankers. Didn't seem to spend a lot of time banking or paying close attention because they had videos to make about dynamic, pioneering, glass ceiling shattering women. So when interest rates were at historic lows, SVB bought more than $20 billion in long-term treasury bonds. And to be fair, they were encouraged by the government to do this. All banks were. The problem was when interest rates went up, as they were always going to because they can't stay at zero forever. Did you know that? Well, when that happened, those bonds lost their value. And that, of course, was a disaster for a ton of banks, but a true disaster for SVB. And then a disaster for a lot of individuals who had their money there and companies that had borrowed money from SVB. So you can expect a lot of bankruptcies in the coming weeks due to this. And then the countless downstream effects from those bankruptcies, all of them bad. So this is a disaster, not just for the tech industry, people you could easily make fun of, but for everyone, for all of us. But the interesting thing is the Biden administration doesn't seem to care at all. They're not that interested because numbers, whether you're making money or losing money or doing something efficiently or doing it sloppily, doesn't really matter as long as you're making videos about pioneering female bankers and as long as they get to ski in Tahoe. That's the real concern. So just today, Biden's top economic advisor, Cecilia Rouse, addressed reporters in the White House in the briefing room about what had just happened. And she assured everybody that the bank run we're watching is an isolated incident. No, it's not a big deal. It's just this one bank. It's not connected to anything else at all. And the fact that this bank failed, just like the fact that FTX failed, has nothing to do with the fact that the people who run it spent a ton of their time doing completely irrelevant crap that had to do with politics and changing American culture. Are you reassured by that? Well, you should know that Cecilia Rouse has been thinking a lot about this. When she worked at Princeton, which is a university in New Jersey, she wrote her research agenda on diversity, equity, and inclusion. The title is, we're quoting, "Diversity in the Economics Profession, a New Attack on an Old Problem." Because the color of your economists is essential. Their competence, not so much. Just so you know. And by the way, these are the consequences of that attitude. See South Africa, where they don't have electricity tonight. Coincidentally or not, that is the very same topic, diversity in economics, that our director of our National Economic Council, Lael Brainard, is also fixated on. Another genius. When Brainard was at the Fed in 2021, she wasn't too concerned about future bank collapses due to the insane and reckless Fed policy she was overseeing. No, why worry about that? Because there's climate change. And that's what she was really worried about. Climate change, quote, "is part of our prudential and financial stability responsibilities. We are developing scenario analysis to model the possible financial risks associated with climate change and assess the resilience of individual financial institutions in the financial system to those risks." Just to pause for 1 second. Anyone who writes that way is a moron. M-O-E-R-O-N, moron. So if you find someone in a position of authority, particularly in economics, who cannot write a declarative sentence, be prepared for your banks to fail. And we should be honest that ESG and equity are only part of the problem here. Stupidity is a huge part of the problem. SVB and FTX, for that matter, are just two of several major players in the financial industry that have gone under in recent months. Are you noticing any of this? There was the bank Silvergate, more than $11 billion in assets. There was the crypto broker Voyager, $1 billion in assets. The crypto fund 3AC, $10 billion in assets. BlockFi and a number of others. On Friday, Wells Fargo customers reported they didn't get their paychecks as expected. The bank says that was just a computer glitch. We don't really know, but we're paying attention. What is very clear is that we're witnessing something serious happening in the finance sector and in other sectors of our economy. We don't know where any of this is going. We're certainly praying for the best. We don't want to see hysteria. But if you're the Treasury Secretary of the United States, you would be very concerned. You'd be paying really close attention because that's your job. But Jenny Yellen is not paying close attention. She's not worried about it because it's in this country. She's worried instead about funding the pensions of Ukrainian government workers. She flew to Kiev the other day to tell us that. And as always, Janet Yellen is highly focused on her core duties as Treasury Secretary. That would be equity, climate change, and abortion.
The Biden-Harris administration has made racial equity a centerpiece of our economic agenda. Roe v. Wade and access to reproductive health care, including abortion, helped lead to increased labor force participation. President Biden, and I feel the same way too, believe that climate change is an existential threat that absolutely must be addressed. The message I bring you from President Biden is simple. America will stand with Ukraine for as long as it takes.
Okay, so she's very upset about Ukraine and we don't have enough abortions and equity, abortion, Ukraine. Okay, got it. But children hour is over. It's time for the adults because we have actual problems. You might even call them systemic problems with our economy. And so when you have those, you want smart, wise people with foresight and self-control and the ability to focus on things of actual consequence. Not on the fashionable crap that occupies most of our time here on cable news, but on the long-term stuff that will ensure your country remains strong and prosperous when you're gone, which for most of these people won't be long because they're very, very old. Where are those people? Where are the adults? Here you have the second biggest bank failure in American history, the biggest since 2008, the second largest failure in our nation's history, and they're yammering on about racial equity? Really? Yes, they are. Because nobody in Washington at this point even acknowledges economics is real unless it can be tied somehow to climate change or racism. Here's Congresswoman Cori Bush of St. Louis.
My Republican colleagues have unironically invited for-profit think tank and oil titans whose expertise is in maximizing profits, especially at the expense of our Black, our Brown, and our Indigenous neighbors' health, safety, and well-being. Last week, I joined Ranking Member Raskin and all of my Democratic oversight colleagues in calling on oversight Republicans to denounce white nationalism and denounce white supremacy in all its forms.
White supremacy, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, great. That's fine. You know, we got peace and prosperity. You can handle some dumb people at the helm, and it's kind of amusing. They're fun to laugh at. But if things start going south, the dumb people have to leave, and they should be replaced by the smart, wise people who have some idea of how to fix things. But those people have not yet arrived. Joe Biden just introduced a $7 trillion budget. Oh, a budget? Funding? That's money, right? That should address the core economic concerns that every person can feel. Most people don't understand it. Everybody can feel it. So this $7 trillion budget mentions climate change 148 times. It mentions equity, never defined, 63 times. Environmental justice, 25 times. And cross-dressing, now known as transgenderism, 8 times. Feel better? Ooh, the adults back? No. But it will add $20 trillion to the national debt over 10 years, and that means more inflation and more interest rate hikes and more bank failures. This could be very, very, very serious. We hope it's not. We hope it ends today, an isolated story, but it very much could be. But our leaders don't care, and in fact, they seem to be doing everything they can to accelerate it, and that's not reassuring.
So my fear is they're doing this on purpose to usher the central bank digital currency. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know, but I can't help but wonder if that is true. And if it is, make sure you have some protection with your family. Like I said, gold, silver, and some insurance products to help protect your family, because the insurance companies, they have a lot of cash on hand. It's a contract that they have to adhere to. So there's a lot of safety mechanisms involved with insurance products. So talk to EPS Wealth Management at iloveeps.com or epswealthmanagement.com and let them help you with that. Hey, I'm going to get to that thought in just a second, but right now I'm going to take a quick break. In the early 1900s, like in 1920s, 30s, with $20, you used to be able to buy an entire men's suit. You could get the handkerchief, the tie, the vest, the jacket, the pants, the belt, everything. And you could also buy that with a piece of gold. Now, in today's standards, you can't buy much with $20. Maybe a tie, maybe that's it. You could not even come close to an entire men's suit with a $20 bill. However, if you still had a piece of gold, you could still buy an entire men's suit with that piece of gold. See, silver and gold have intrinsic value, and it's had intrinsic value since the beginning of time. It's always been a currency around since the existence of man, gold and silver. So why not protect your investments and protect your earning power by owning some gold and silver? And the easiest way to do that is contacting Jim Tewell at epswealthmanagement.com. That's Edward Paul Sam, wealthmanagement.com, epswealthmanagement.com. Give him a call and let him know you'd like some, to have some tangible assets in your portfolio. You'd like to have some gold and silver, and he can help you do that. So if you're ready to protect yourself and protect your investments, then go ahead and give Jim Tewell a call, whom you've seen on our program at epswealthmanagement.com. Let him know Amber May sent you.
Like to start your day off with a cup of coffee? What if I told you you could get a cup of coffee that not only helps rejuvenate your mind, get you going in the morning, but it could reduce stress? What would you say? Well, I have just the solution for you. I have the Java Boost right here. It's delicious. It's the most creamy, delicious vanilla coffee that is infused with antioxidants from muscadine, ginger, and turmeric. It eliminates cravings, it helps support healthy blood chemistry, and it promotes healthy weight loss. When have you ever heard of a coffee that helps promote healthy weight loss? So if you want a coffee that's delicious, creamy, vanilla, helps reduce stress and fatigue, and helps promote healthy weight loss, then you want to grab Java Boost for yourself. And the easiest way to do that is going to cupahealth.com. That's cupahealth.com. Use promo code Amber May at checkout. You are listening to the Amber May Show, and now we return to the show already in progress. So that was EPSWealthManagement.com to get some gold and silver in your portfolio. So there is an article I wanted to read from you. It's Zero Hedge, and it says the U.S. banking system was destroyed by QE and negative rates killed it. And every time there's a banking crisis, some scratch their heads and wonder, how could this happen? Surely it must be greed, bad risk management, or lack of regulation. More intervention should solve it. However, all those excuses miss the most critical point. The U.S. banking system was destroyed by design, and the big banks played along with it. The fractional reserve system has always been a problem. Very few people understand how quickly the capital of a bank can dissolve. The entire balance sheet of a bank is a deck of cards, and the smallest decline in the profitable asset-based loans are volatile liabilities. Deposits would make the entire building collapse because the problem has always been to take an additional long-term risk using short-term liquid liabilities, which are deposits. The mismatch between assets and liabilities makes the entire balance sheet collapse, and there is never enough capital and reserves to cover the losses. However, decades of prudent banking and increasingly sophisticated risk management tools help reduce the risk of bank failure. It was never going to be perfect, but it worked for the most part. One of the lowest risk asset sovereign bonds, artificially expensive through quantitative easing, which is QE, quantitative easing, bond purchases. This in turn would make governments recklessly increase deficits and forget about solvency or risk because the yield of their bonds would remain depressed through money printing. These are creative reserves, as the idiomatic MMT calls it. Say goodbye to the profitable side of the bank asset base. banks would take increasingly higher risk for lower yields in their investments and liquidity-enhancing portfolios, making the lowest risk asset expensive and unprofitable by depressing the yield artificially. Also makes all other quoted and unquoted financial assets more expensive, incentivizing bubbles that inflate with quantitative easing. And when they burst, evaporated the market value of the assets of the bank. Like poof, evaporates the market value of the assets of the bank. Phase two. So that was phase one. Phase two is introduce negative real or nominal rates. Interest rates are the price of risk. Manipulate interest rates and you extensive extraordinary risk-taking, even if the bank does not intend to. Negative rates are the destruction of money and the clearest way to make the balance sheets of a bank even more fragile. The loan side of asset base makes no real return. The leverage on those loans need to rise. Bank take more risk than expected for lower returns with each lending operation, and the investment side of full of increasingly overvalued assets that rise with quantitative easing despite weak economic conditions, but burst at the same time. Now, phase three are bail out the big banks. You let the small ones collapse. The latest perverse incentive is to make the whole The latest preserve incentive is to make the depositors of the large banks through a special assessment in the FDIC, that's the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, which you should know about, which creates an incentive for large depositors to take their money away from regional and small banks and place it in too big to fail banks. However, the too big to fail banks are also the ones that accumulate more risk in large zombie firms, and the big derivative positions try to take to squeeze some margin and returns out of their financial repression. Now, this is how banks are destroyed by easy money. No amount of regulation can avoid these collapse because regulations is the problem. No amount of regulation can prevent a financial crisis when it's the regulators who incentivize accumulation of risk. Deem sovereign bonds as no-risk assets. The supervisor prints trillions of dollars disguising risk with negative rates. So bad risk management, bad risk management, maybe. Maybe it's bad risk management. However, do you think the risk managers at the failed banks were stupid and did not understand the risk of assets and liability mismatch? Banks only accumulate risk in the assets and see they are told that they have no risk. And the Federal Reserve purchased trillions of sovereign bonds and mortgage-backed securities. Why would anyone think those are high-risk assets? Real estate is the safest activity to lend because the last thing that families stop paying is the mortgage. Why believe it is a high-risk asset? However, it is much worse. A decline in value bond mortgage or investment should not bring the collapse of a bank. So what makes it so fragile? The fact that banks need to leverage those positions multiple times to get a return. That even after increasing debt, it is still below cost of capital. So why is the return on assets and equity so poor in banks? It's years of repression of interest rates and inflation of sovereign bonds. The reader may say that easy money has helped the economy recover from severe crisis created by excess risk-taking. Yet it seems that no one remembers that the real estate and tech bubbles of the past were fueled by cheap money incentives created by regulations and the central bank. If rates floated freely, the interest rates on riskier activities would rise faster and prevent accumulation of risk. Furthermore, if central banks did not perpetrate the disguise of risk through purchase of sovereign bonds at any price, the lowest risk assets would not create a domino effect of valuation and price increases, nor the subsequent collapse. So when central banks decide to solve a crisis created by a bubble by inflating other bubbles even faster, they build the foundation of the next crisis. A bank collapse is not caused by a financial crisis. Banks are not the cause. They are the symptom. The assets and liabilities of a bank are the clearest evidence of the broad problem in the economy, elevated by valuation beyond fundamental and riskier loans insolvency dictates. A bank collapse does not create a contingent risk. The risk is already there. The bank has the bank that collapses, usually a weak link in a long chain, is only the warning sign of something that is widespread and happening elsewhere. Banks are not the cause of a crisis. They're the symptoms of the accumulation of excess risk through the economy. A risk that would not have been built in such a widespread way if the price and quantity of the money were not constantly manipulated to disguise it. The crisis also be solved by incentivizing more risk. Well, that's it for today's show. Thanks for joining me. I can't wait. I have some great episodes coming up on the upcoming shows. Join me on Telegram at The Amber May Show. I'm on Frank Speech, Amber May, and True Social Amber May, and I just joined Clout Hub. Find me there. Take care.
It's because of a mutual friend of ours that I was actually connected with you. Michael, the artist, the Commander's artist, he's a friend of yours, and he's done some work for you. He's designed the logos on this show, and the Commander's artist, he's a great guy, isn't he? He speaks very highly of you.
Now, Michael is a terrific American patriot, and if anybody, I hope that you will promote his website and him. He does, the artwork that he does is very, very patriotic, and one of my sort of big things with Michael is Michael came into my life through this political persecution journey that my family and I went through, and he stepped up in a big way to help us raise some money for our legal defense. And Michael and I have become very good friends, and he's a terrific, faithful man, and I love him.